Projects Mobile Studios. This is Superpowered Society. I'm your host, Ryan Blake. What's your power in today's society? Welcome back to another episode of Superpowered Society, where we're always looking for superheroes in today's world. Superheroes are always stronger together, right? So with me today for a second time is Tehran.
Absolutely.
Welcome back, Tehran.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. Last time, Tehran was with us. We talked about X-Men and the representation of civil rights, also connecting that with how we can learn a lot and take some lessons about moving forward, having empathy, and really just coming to an understanding and using X-Men as a better conversation point.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't listen to that episode, make sure you check it out. I believe it was episode 3. Never Ending Civil Rights Battle, so check that out. But needless to say, between then and now, in the world and in society, a lot's happened.
A lot, yeah.
Right? For example, Charlottesville, and I don't even know what you call that.
This is just tragedy.
That'd be a good word for it.
Awakening. It
stirred a lot of emotions.
Absolutely.
And it brought out a lot of things that many people, I'd say, didn't think existed anymore, right? So it's just kind of interesting to see that happen, to see everything that's transpired with the current president,
mm-hmm.
The conversations on a global level with North Korea. It's kind of crazy to think.
I know every generation of people thinks that they live in a weird or scary time, but man, we are really living in some scary times.
Well, as you say scary, you know, you could say going to war could be scary, but it's not like it's just on an international front where you can somewhat feel safe knowing mm-hmm. that war may happen elsewhere,
right?
But it's happening here too. Yeah. So we're kind of coming at it on all sides.
Oh yeah. And with social media, I mean, you have so much more access.
Right.
And, you know, during World War II, you didn't know stuff was going on, right?
Right.
Now you can't get on a platform of social media and not see what's happened. So it's a crazy, scary time, and there's a lot of information and misinformation floating around out there. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But, you know, let's kind of transition today a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think with everything we just said, it's needless to say, we could definitely use some superheroes in today's world, right?
Yeah.
Their physical powers, their positive philosophies, their fortitude to never give up until evil has truly perished.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we don't live in a fictional storyline. It'd be nice if we did sometimes, mm-hmm. right? But unfortunately, we don't. A single woman or man isn't going to save our society. It's going to take a group of individuals to do that, especially since there isn't these superpowers. And what I tend to find in the title of this podcast, this episode, is power in people, not heroes.
Yeah.
And I think that today we're gonna find the power is in the people. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Our show tonight, The Flying Man of DC. Does he really exist? Is he real? Or fiction. You can't stop this.
They say he can fly. Well, I don't want him to fly. Gentlemen, I'm prepared to offer a bounty for this flying man. $1 million alive, $2 million dead.
How can we stop the crime and the gangs if we act like we don't see them? Everybody complains about the police. They aren't perfect. But how can you complain when you do nothing?
You can't stop this.
The black on black crime in DC, it's kind of nice to know our brothers out there trying to do something.
High criteria, smooth exterior, could be no less.
I just want to say, I don't know if he's real or not, but I've got two kids, and I just pray that he is. All I know is that somehow someone they call the Flying Man closed down a crack house, and it brought my son home.
You can't stop this. Ain't nobody bad like the media man.
Another sighting of the African-American male in a cape. They shut down 15 crack houses, stopped 11 attempted robbers, and brought peace between two inner-city street gangs and the police. The gangs have now vowed to work together to rebuild the community they have destroyed.
Searching the right and wrong. But now I realize I gotta find it on my own. Ain't nobody better like, ain't nobody better like the media man. Ain't nobody better like, ain't nobody better like the media man.
All right, you know you're a product of the 90s if you know and recognize Robert Townshend's The Meteor Man. So this is Robert Townshend in general is someone who I loved seeing growing up. Just to kind of, a lot of the things he did were very positive, and I think there's obviously a focus in the black community in that, but I think there's a lot to take away from just his messages in general. They weren't necessarily, didn't have to be focused in the black community. You know, podcasting wasn't a thing back in the 90s. Had it been, and had he translated a lot of his work, I think, into audio, it would have been translatable to any type of environment, which I think is really cool to kind of recognize.
Oh, yeah.
So, but as we're focused on Meteor Man, I always like to start with some history. So we're going to start with a little bit. And realistically, it's going to be a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of history to this character. Other than that, Meteor Man was it was a movie made in 1993. It was written and directed by Robert Townshend, who we've already kind of mentioned already. And I guess some of the history you can get is Robert Townshend was always about making positive movies. He's a well-educated individual. I think something you can really take from his work is that he was extremely passionate. Not to say that other writers and directors aren't passionate, but he was passionate in the things he was doing, and he put himself in it to live that experience, versus being passionate about it and being on the outside. He's very much integrated into everything that he was doing, which I think is awesome. And in the 90s especially, you see the positive impact he had on black movie, on the black movie scene and genre.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 90s, a lot of black movies, and there's an article I read about this that was interviewing Townshend, and in the 90s, a lot of the black movies were portrayed black stereotypes. So you saw a lot of the stereotypical gangbanger movies. Boys in the Hood, I think, is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Or Menace to Society is another one that I think are reputable movies that people can recognize. Or New Jack City is another one, right? Those are movies that people hold close to their heart because they're like, this is a badass movie. Oh, yeah. It's a great storyline. It's telling the truth, right?
Telling a truth.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that correction. Mm-hmm. But I think as you look at the 90s, that didn't necessarily portray black communities in the most positive light, especially during the time frame of the LA riots, Rodney King, O.J. Simpson. You saw all these negative things in the media, and then it was almost reinforced in the movie scene.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what came or happened first, I think is irrelevant, but they kept reinforcing one another.
Yep.
Creating this, I think, what I would say, this huge racial divide.
Yeah. Self-perpetuating cycle.
Yes. So, but I think you look at, this whole podcast about superpower society, right? I think you can look at Robert Townshend as a superhero and the things that he was doing, and that he wanted to change that image on a major level. And he wanted to integrate what would be an impactful thing and something that he enjoyed, which was superheroes, right? So he created one, being Meteor Man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of critics had talked about Meteor Man really being a subpar movie or failed because of the cost of production and the lack of revenue it created. But I think from an outsider's perspective, maybe this is where me and you can really start and get into it. I don't know that it was I don't know that it failed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the financial components of it, but I think there's a lot of messages and the image and the story it created was extremely positive. And for someone who we were both young at the age when that came out, For me personally, it influenced me in various ways.
Oh, yeah.
So, oh, yeah.
And I'll say, you know, for me with Media Man, there were messages that I picked up on that I didn't know I was picking up on.
Right? Give me an example.
It took me looking at this, watching the show again when I was an adult to realize what I was picking up on. So I'll give you an example. There's a scene where Meteor Man is cultivating this community garden. He turns this vacant lot that has abandoned cars into this community garden, essentially, so people can get food, free food, right? But in the background, while he's working, you hear a radio host talking, and she's taking callers. And one of the things, one of the guys, one of the callers says, I don't know if he's real or not, but, you know, with all the violence that's going on in our communities, it's nice to see somebody from within doing something. And, you know, in the moment you hear that as a kid, you know, yeah, somebody from the community is helping out, somebody's doing something. But that reiterates to me that communities want to see help from within,
right?
Communities grow from within. You know, oftentimes we talk about people coming from the outside, coming in to help enact change, when in all actuality, communities want to be empowered from within.
Right.
And it's so amazing to see that message was instilled in me early on, and I didn't realize it until just a couple nights ago when I rewatched Meteor Man.
Right. Yeah, that scene in general is extremely powerful. Let's come back to that. I kind of want to go back to a little bit. Let's get some for those who haven't seen Meteor Man, you can buy it on Amazon for like $5. So I encourage you to do that. It's worth it. But to kind of give a little summary of the story, Meteor Man is essentially the main character – who's Robert Townshend. I can't think of what his name is in the movie.
I can't remember his name in the movie either.
But needless to say, Robert Townshend is the main character. He is a substitute teacher. Doesn't get highlighted a lot, but he's also a musician. Mm-hmm. So he plays in a part-time band. And he essentially is out at night, and he's actually – is he walking around at night, and then he's running from, or his car just got – His bass just got stolen.
Yeah, so he throws his bass into the backseat of his car.
Yep.
Because he realized that he doesn't have money to get gas. And so he goes to his mom to get gas money. And by the time he gets back, his car has been broken into.
Right. And which also sets the scene in that they are in a residential area of D.C. Mm-hmm. So you see a certain level of poverty. Yep. You see gangs kind of being a part of the community. But he gets his bass stolen. Mm-hmm. He's in as he's walking back. All of a sudden, this meteor comes from out of the sky and starts to chase him. He's running, and it just hits him.
And can I point something out
quick?
It was interesting because the meteor, it's coming down towards Earth. Mm-hmm. But once it gets to, like, eye level, it seems to target him.
Yeah.
Almost as if it chose him.
Right.
For this particular power. But go ahead. I know there's more.
I love that. It makes me think of Green Lantern.
Right?
So he gets hit. He gets picked up by ambulance police. In the hospital, is all wrapped up. They unwrap him, and it looks as if he was never touched.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, they thought he had, you know, third-degree burns. I don't know if he can have fourth-degree burns, but he was essentially seen as badly injured. But they unwrapped him, and he was a medical phenomena to everybody who's standing there. Through this, we all of a sudden see these powers come out. At that point, you see that he was gifted some supernatural abilities to really just kind of be of who he is then. So you initially see him have x-ray vision as he looks out the window and everybody's in their underwear.
Right.
I think it's funny that they're not naked.
Right. He can't,
in their underwear.
He can see through clothes, but not underwear. But again, it was like a PG movie. I get it.
It's family friendly. So we see that. You see him touch a book. And all of a sudden, he's an expert in anything that he touches for 30 seconds, though, right? And then all of a sudden, he forgets it all. You end up seeing that he has super strength. You can see that he can fly. But in addition to that, though, you already mentioned that when he creates his community garden, in that scene, he puts his hands on the ground, and it's almost like he's sharing his power energy with the earth, and now it grows these giant vegetables. So it's almost – you could almost say his powers are limitless or – to some extent, not entirely known.
Right.
But I don't think his powers are what the point of the movie is.
No.
But as I say that, though, that's kind of – that happens. You see this kind of ebb and flow of needing some support in the community for the movie's sake, and that a gang known by the Golden Lords is kind of running it over. You see a lot of kids getting involved in it. They're roughing people up. And there's a community organization that's trying to get together to be like a crime watch, a crime stop. Mm-hmm. Media Man comes in, starts to save the day. He ends up creating and making the Golden Lords mad, creating more repercussions and things that will, and bad things that will happen in the community. So now this community
wants him out.
They get mad. They want to kick him out. Until like near, you get to the end of the movie, to where now they're kind of cheering for him, rooting him on. Mm-hmm. And the movie ends up in a positive way, to where you end up seeing the community really rally around each other to.
He essentially, in effect, loses his powers.
Right, right.
And the community, he loses his powers at a pretty bad time.
Right.
Right when the Golden Lords are about to basically kill him, the community comes together, and the people who were the most afraid to step up and say anything, do anything, they all took a stand in that moment.
So that is very much of a high level overview, mm-hmm. right? And we'll get into some intricacies as we keep chatting. But going back to what you initially mentioned with the community garden piece, here's what I love about that scene and why I think it really relates to how we can create a truly superpowered society. So Meteor Man, as we said, pushes things around, mm-hmm. cleans up this area, makes a community garden. The first thing that stands out to me is there is a, I don't know if it's a lack of resources, but I just, like the access to fresh produce mm-hmm. In inner city communities. Mm-hmm. People have seen those as being not as accessible. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about he did something for the community and now giving you access to fresh fruits and vegetables, which we know are naturally healthy for you. Mm-hmm. I see that while that's in a movie and people have done that in community gardens, I think Michelle Obama had done something in several communities across the country mm-hmm. to instill programs like that or support programs like that. We live in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. One of the things I thought about was Brightside.
Yep. Lots of colleges and universities.
Yep.
Getting involved in helping out with community gardens.
Yep.
Organizations. Organizations.
We're even hearing about a science class who mm-hmm. one of their projects was to educate and train and develop corner stores, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is our essentially a convenience shop, to grow produce right outside their building mm-hmm. and then be able to sell it.
Right.
So now you're empowering the community and economically, but also providing fresh access to fresh fruits and vegetables. I think there's a lot to take away from that, and that's a simple thing that a regular person can do to empower a community just mm-hmm. in their health and livelihood.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it goes to show, you know, when we talk about like the problems of the world and the issues, right? Sometimes we get really big picture.
Yeah.
We talk about war. We talk about poverty in Africa, which don't get me started on how off wrong that statement is. Uh-huh. Like we talk about Africa as if it's a city, right?
Yeah.
And it's all impoverished when it's a continent that actually thrives in many places. But I'm digressing. We forget sometimes though that these areas, the inner city, some areas in the inner city, specifically if you're in an inner city and it's an impoverished or underserved or underdeveloped area, the lack of access to the most basic things.
Right.
Right. I remember, I'm from Chicago. I remember going to the grocery store, the corner store, and you could get fruit, but it wasn't fresh, right? Like it was saran wrapped. Mm. And basically picture how a steak, you know, your local grocery store comes wrapped.
Yep.
That's what it looked like. I don't know how old it was. I don't know how long it'd been preserved, but you know, I didn't have access to, you know, say, you know, your basically your big chain stores. They have all the produce there. We didn't have that.
Right.
It's just so interesting to see that, you know, that's one of the things that gets overlooked a lot of times in these communities.
And that's a small thing. I think if anybody can come with the argument, what about canned fruit and vegetables? Okay, that's not the same as fresh fruit.
It is.
But I think the counter argument to that is in today, Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
Still without clean water. It's been like three years.
If not more.
That's a serious issue, and that's a basic necessity to life. So I know there are small communities who are trying to support that and do what they can, mm-hmm. But I think there's an infrastructure issue there. Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't we supporting our people in our backyard, our backyard being our own country,
right,
to get them a clean access to something that they need to live?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Can I jump back to one of his powers?
Yeah, of course.
We talked about his powers and ones that are cool. I am most impressed. The flying's cool. The super speed is cool. I mean, that's all great. I love that he can absorb whatever he what book he touches. So there are a couple of scenes where he touches, he'll touch a medical book, and now he's an expert in, you know, epidemiology or whatever, right? And then he touches a karate book, and now he can fight really well. And he touches
like Bruce Lee,
right? And now he touches a modeling book, and he's a runway model for 30 seconds. But talk about underlying messages. He literally made knowledge power. Right. Yeah. He literally absorbed the knowledge and turned it into a power. We talk about that all the time, but this is a this is an embodiment of actually what that means and what that looks like. And I just thought I think that's amazing. That's the best that underlying power that I saw in that whole movie.
The fact that it's books.
Yeah, right. He's not touching like pictures,
right?
Or the TV set and absorbing something. He's touching a book. He can absorb a textbook. He can absorb a magazine. He can absorb a novel, like whatever. But he is touching this literary piece, and he is turning it into knowledge.
I'm going to take that step further.
Or turning it into power, excuse me.
He just touches it, and he has 30 seconds of knowledge.
Yep.
If he had opened it.
Right.
What does that say?
Right.
Right? And that's just reiterating your point, but I think that's the – there is power in reading and knowledge. Oh, yeah. And –
touching it will get you
only so far, but actually going through it and understanding it.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a message in there to our community. It. Absolutely,
that's awesome. Sticking with his powers, you mentioned like power to fly is cool. One of the reasons why I think in some ways this movie gets criticized and seen as like failed is because you take a common person who's not, I would say, not entirely successful, because the character himself is. He's a part-time musician. He's a substitute teacher. He's broke all the time.
He's late on his rent.
Right.
He acknowledged that.
Yes.
Right?
So, I mean, he's already kind of like not an admirable person in that sense. But then he becomes this imperfect superhero. Mm-hmm. He has the power to fly, but he's afraid of heights. When he starts flying for the first time, he's not but 3 feet off the ground. Right. He, in every way, he always wants to avoid violence, which I think is awesome. And he always tries to use his words before he starts to fight.
Yeah.
That's not excitable in superhero movies, especially in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would do better in 2015,
for sure.
17, than it would have in 1993.
Oh, yeah.
But what I love about that is, you know, nobody actually thinks, you know, if all of a sudden was gifted these powers, I'd immediately do all this cool stuff. And it's like, well, would you though?
There's a learning curve.
There's a huge learning curve. And there's that fear. Like there's this whole aspect of fear.
Absolutely.
Just because you can fly doesn't mean you're going to be comfortable with being 7,000 feet above the ground.
Right.
What if all of a sudden your powers just escaped you?
Mm-hmm.
Right now you're falling and you're like, well, now what?
I don't like flying an airplane.
Right.
So
like to me, this whole like journey of this superhero, of him being scared of it, and not knowing how to really utilize it,
right.
I think that's really powerful in that, you know, we can sometimes be scared with the things that when also, you know, it's that whole mentality of with great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think it's like when you all of a sudden get this power, you don't know how to be responsible with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk that cautious line, and I think there's some value to that. And as we get into these powers and moving into being able to be change makers within our communities,
mm-hmm.
We have to have a little bit of fear still instilled with us so that we don't go too far and make things worse for ourselves or for other people.
But when you think about it too, look, when he got his power, he didn't want it.
Right.
He didn't want to have anything to do with his powers. There were times where he wanted to look the other way. Uh-huh. It took a tragedy. It took a woman being beaten outside of her home.
Yeah.
And then every community member saying, I didn't see anything
right.
out of fear. For him to say, man, something's got to give. We got to do something different. And
right.
then he accepted it. How many activists, how many people who see a problem and they know the problem exists don't want to have anything to do with it because of fear, because of the amount of work that it might take, because of the repercussions that you might see, because of the way you might be labeled? How many people stray away from their calling because of fear? And in that same light, how many people see something that pushes them over the edge? And
right.
that's the thing that makes them. I mean, this movie had so many parallels in it in what's going on in our current society and people stepping up and being their own best advocates. We can go on for days just talking about parallels.
We can. And as just that last point you made and the amount of parallels, I think that's why when you watch the movie, there are so many recognizable cast members.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you have Robert Townshend, yeah. who's kind of been on the scene a little bit. He previously he had made a movie called The Five Heartbeats.
Oh, yeah. He was in a lot, yeah.
Yep.
The Parenthood, the TV show.
That didn't come till after. Oh, exactly. I'm going to get into that. Yeah, I have a little theory behind there. So he had kind of been around. But then all of a sudden you see Eddie Griffith, who's new to the scene. Mm-hmm. But you see Don Cheadle. Mm-hmm. You see Luther Vandross. Mm-hmm. You see the rap group Cypress Hill. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Naughty by Nature mm-hmm. is in it. Who else is James Earl Jones,
yep. Layla Rashan, she's a nurse.
Yep.
The list goes on.
And I think it's amazing to say that all these people wanted to be a part of it, mm-hmm. And that they all saw what he was trying to portray and get across. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unfortunate that in 93, you know, I would say this movie was somewhat revolutionary. From what everything that I've seen, this is one of the first black superhero movies to hit a major motion picture, to have a comic strip after it, because Marvel picked up 6 issues mm-hmm. of Meteor Man, to have the opportunity to get a really good following. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that it was too soon, because I think now when you started to see a big movement made, which was the early 2000s. You started to see Spawn come out, the black superhero. You saw Steel. I did my last episode on Blade. Mm-hmm. But now in 2017, it's becoming more of the conversation. It was like, we should have more black superheroes. Black Panther's got a huge following with it already. It hasn't even come out.
Right.
Luke Cage, right? Not to say they are the same stories, but the fact that you can take a superhero and empower a community. Mm-hmm. And there was I was talking to a guy on Facebook. His name's Raymond X. He's actually got a really good blog post called Peace, Love, and Comics. And he kind of made a comment about taking superheroes. And he had took two of the more recent Green Lantern characters, mm-hmm. but didn't say Green Lanterns. He said, you take a Muslim man and a Latina girl who has like severe anxiety, and you put them into a comic story and look at the impact that it could have. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially where the conversation went. And I was like, yeah, how come that didn't work 20 years ago?
Right. We just weren't ready.
We weren't ready to change our perception. Because I think this movie, it fed into the perception a little bit because you still had the Golden Lords and these gangs. But then you also saw the positive side of these communities, and you couldn't take a single image of a black person and say they're all gangbangers. They're right. all like this.
Right.
And I think about that on some greater levels, in that it's very easy for us as a society mm-hmm. to stereotype individuals and put it to an entire population.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think about that in some of the work that we do. So that we, you know, the work that we do, we're representing a brand. Mm-hmm. The way that we act in and outside of our work environment, people right. associate us not Absolutely. By our name or who we are as individuals, Absolutely. But as that brand. Yep. So we do the same thing with people, and I think there's a huge fault in that. And those who can get past that point, I would attribute and say, like, that's very much of a superpower, because that's beyond mm-hmm. human ability mm-hmm. or human normality, mm-hmm. is the better way to put it. So I would love to see Meteor Man get revived. I think it'd be cool with the special effects they can do now.
Because yep. It is cheesy, right? Like, let's be real. Let's put it on the table. It's cheesy, and the graphics are 1993 for sure.
Yes, very much so.
But it's I mean, I think it could do a whole lot better today, because you're right. We're more receptive to superheroes who look a little bit different, have a different background. They're not the cookie yeah. cutter that we're so used to seeing.
Right.
So yeah, whoever's out there listening, somebody pick up Meteor Man and revise that. And I guarantee you it's the perfect time to do it. You got the people who were kids who watched it. Now they're adults, and maybe some of them have kids. Bring their kids.
Yes.
Box office, just blockbuster. Do
Let's get it out there. Make Love it happen. To see that.
Make it happen.
A Kickstarter going.
Somebody make
like
that happen.
So obviously there's a lot of that powerful impact that, one of the other things that I wanted to bring up, unless you got something else you want to feed into
Not sure.
from that, kind of going back to, so I was taking out little bits, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, my background, is like rhetorical criticism.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, like the parallels and the messages throughout the movie are constant.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that comes up in the beginning is, Mr. Reed is his name.
Yep.
That's what Robert Townshend's name in the movie. Mr. Reed, he's in the office, and he takes a comic book from a little boy who just got in trouble, and the cover was, it was obviously put there on purpose. Now, I don't remember exactly what. Oh, the comic book was The Faceless Crusader.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the title of it was. And on the cover, the hero is saying, "I'm losing the war." And then you see the villain saying, "Finally, evil will dominate the world."
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a scary aspect, but that's what's happening in that community, because mm-hmm. the Golden Lords are taking over that community.
Oh, yeah.
And that is their world. That is that community's world. And the Golden Lords are starting to take over, and whoever that faceless hero is, it's almost like it's not identified. They're yeah. not doing what they can. And you kind of see that change throughout it. Yeah,
that's the whole theme of the whole neighborhood, if you look at it. They are having that, as you referenced a little bit earlier, they're having that meeting about, how do we make our community safer? What do we need to do? And somebody stood up and flatly said, I think it was James Earl Jones' character, and said, "This is stupid. Like, we need to not stand up. We need to not do things. This is going to make them upset."
Right.
And, you know, that is the embodiment of a helpless community, a community that is so afraid that if I say something, if I do something, if I stand up, I am going to make myself a target,
mm-hmm.
and I can't afford to do that. So I would rather live in the community and the environment that we find ourselves in than potentially do something to put myself in harm's way. And you can't mm-hmm. fault them for that. I mean, we both have kids, right?
Yep.
We aren't as readily willing to go out and put ourselves in harm's way anymore. You know, when we were in college, you might have
felt invulnerable.
Exactly. So, you know, I might have in college, you know, maybe I'll go skydiving. I never went skydiving. But I'm saying maybe I might think about it. Today you couldn't pay me to go skydiving. Right. I have a family that depends on me. Right. So I get it. I totally understand.
And that is a message that's reiterated throughout the entire beginning of the movie. Mr. Reed, so he's in the office, and some one of his kids that he was teaching had gotten beat up. And Mr. Reed is told – he essentially had told the kid, like, you should be running from bullies and not fight back. So he had gave his, like, personal philosophy and theory to what you should do with bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom gets upset and is like, "Why are you telling him to run? That's just going to make things worse and mm-hmm. all this stuff. And he should be teaching to stand up and fight for himself and fight back and all this stuff." And Mr. Reed's like, you know, like, "You need to move away." But then the teacher, Mr. Reed, is told to teach the books, not philosophies of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I struggle with that a little bit. There was a – I went to Park Center High School, right?
What is Park? Can you talk a little bit about
the demographics? Yeah, so Park Center High School, it's when I was there, I found it to be an extremely diverse high school. You had varying socioeconomic backgrounds. It's racially – I would say I feel like you captured a third. If I had to do, say, the predominant racial categories, I always saw it as like a third white, a third Asian, a third black.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have been that exactly, but that's kind of the image that I always felt like I was in. There was actually – they took a lot of pride in who they had at that school and that in the cafeteria, that flags of every country that's been represented. And there was maybe over 100 flags in there easily.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really – I want to say it was a unique high school, especially from the areas that it pulled from, because you got kids from North Minneapolis and almost all the way out to Champlin, which is a little bit more affluent when you get out to that way.
Right.
So there's really racial diverse makeup, but it was extremely noticeable on the football team. There was a coach who was there. He was an administrator. His name was JT Turner. He's a former Minnesota Vikings player. He's a Pro Bowl player. He's a football coach. And he not only loved to coach, but he loved to be the kids, and he knew the impact that it would have. Recently, I had chatted with him, and I was like, "Oh, man, like, how's the football season going?" He's like, "They don't let me coach no more." I was like, "What do you mean they don't let you coach anymore?" He's like, "Administrators, they don't want administrators in the field." And he even said they don't necessarily, the hierarchy and how these decisions are made doesn't necessarily understand the influence that him as a successful black male can have on black youth, especially in a high school like Park Center,
mm-hmm.
which has become more diverse since mm-hmm. I've been there. And I take that back. It's become – I would say it's become more diverse. You see a bigger mixture of people's backgrounds and where they're coming from and academic abilities and everything. But he was always an extremely positive role model, and he just got taken out of an opportunity to be a positive role model in a scene where people are really excited and passionate, right?
Yeah.
Being the football field,
right.
Whatever it is. So now he's got to kind of stand back and try to find other ways to do it. But he was always like a happy, excited guy. You could hear his laugh halfway across the field, or if not on the other side of the school. But he was always just like in the back of your mind, you just saw him as a positive image. And I think there's value when people as teachers or administrators can teach you philosophies to life. School doesn't always have to be about the books in my mind.
No, absolutely.
Those are people who can influence you in literally positive ways. So to me, it was like frustrating to see Mr. Reed be told in the movie not to do this. And now it's still happening in society and that people are being told, teach the books still. Teach what you need to in this school. Let everybody else teach them philosophy of life. So I struggle with that because I feel like they go very hand in hand with one another.
They do. And I get, you know, from the one perspective, I get it, right? If a philosophy is literally, let's say your philosophy is hate.
Yeah.
Then that philosophy, you know what, that can stay at home, right?
Right.
Don't teach philosophy. Teach the books. But there's that gray area, right? You know, there are going to be these teachings that I have for you or just lived experience that I've had that have shaped and influenced the way I think and feel and, you know, act and, you know, perceive myself in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I think if teachers teach it as a take it or leave it sort of thing, right? You know, I'm going to put this thing out there. Some of it you might like, some of it you might not like. Uh-huh. Take what you like, leave what you don't, and we're good. You know, the best teachers were the ones who didn't just teach from the book.
Right.
Right. So you're absolutely right to hear, to see that play out in the movie the way that it did. It's certainly, again, another parallel. It highlights what's going on today when we were kids, when our kids are going to be going through schools and probably so on for a long time. So that's another interesting parallel.
Yeah. But I'm going to let you, I know you got a list of things.
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of things that that popped out to me. One of the big things was that at the beginning of the movie, right when he got his powers, at least, you see the Crips and the Bloods involved in a crazy shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police get involved. So there's a three-way shootout. Meteor Man descends from the sky between the bullets, gets everyone to stop shooting, gets everyone to walk towards the middle, literally closing the proximity gap. They all get towards close to each other, and they all put their guns down. But the interesting thing is, which I don't know, you can take it, leave it. It's kind of cheesy, right? Because when you shoot the police, there's no putting your guns down like this. That's a whole other story for a whole other day, right? But everybody comes to the middle, and they put their guns down. And the things that you hear people saying, it's so amazing. Like one of the police officers says, hey, should we go up there? And another police officer says, ooh, well, we got to try something different. Something's got to give. Right. And just like hearing people, he's doing more without his powers.
Right. Right?
His powers just gave him confidence almost. If you would have stripped his powers away from him but left him with the confidence, he still would have had impact in his community. Right. So I thought that was so amazing that his powers just highlighted something that was dormant in him the whole time, which was his confidence to go out there and be a change maker within his community. So I thought that was amazing.
That almost gives me chills a little bit. Like, right? I almost want to start crying. That,
right?
Like, so, like, that to me is so powerful.
That's so crazy. Now, there's another piece. We left out a really big contributor to the movie, probably my favorite character, and he was probably the most famous person in the movie. That was Bill Cosby.
Ah, yes.
We left out Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby's in the movie. He is what I believe they're portraying as maybe a hobo.
Yeah.
I can't confirm that. Maybe he's just, you know.
Almost like a hermit. He doesn't say a word the entire movie.
And that's what I want to point out. He doesn't say a word in the entire movie, but he leads by example. And that brings me back to something that my mom used to tell me. And it's actions speak louder than words. He never said a word in the entire movie. He barked a couple of times to be silly with his dogs.
Right.
But he never said a word. Yet when it came down to it, when the community needed him most, he was there. He was active. He was involved. He inspired people. He was Meteor Man's support. It was amazing to see this character be so pivotal, so impactful, and not have one line in the entire movie. Actions are speaking louder than words. And I think that was a big piece for me. And I guess what I took away from the whole movie was there's one scene where the whole community is standing on the sidewalk and Meteor Man is standing in front of them and he's facing down these gang members and
the Golden Lords.
The Golden Lords.
Yeah.
And they all start to shoot at the people. And Meteor Man, in an instant, starts to catch every bullet from every direction, catches them all. And he says, after he catches all the bullets, the leader of the gang says, "Message. You can't be everywhere at every time, Meteor Man," as to intimidate him.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment and moving forward, what I saw was that you're right. One person can't be everywhere. One person can't change the world. But I can say this. One person can inspire it. He inspired those people to be their own biggest advocates. And they took it upon themselves. When he couldn't do anything, mm-hmm. they took it upon themselves to make the community right, to send away the bad people, to make sure that everything that's going on within that community is up to a certain standard.
Which is how the movie ends up getting to the end.
Exactly.
Right? So when that happens after that, you see this kind of wanting to get rid of Meteor Man, wanting him to leave. Mm-hmm. He says, "Yes, fine, I'll leave. Like, if you guys don't want me here, I will leave." So he's about to. He doesn't ultimately leave. No, he's there.
Didn't have time to.
Right? So Golden Lords come, and he's now in this final battle to fight them. And at that point, he doesn't have his powers. His powers have been drained, right? That meteor is no longer there anymore.
Right.
And he ends up fighting the Golden Lords, and everybody is watching it as a bystander. They're seeing this man get his butt kicked. Beaten to where you can't even recognize him. And it's like sad, but then all of a sudden, like, as the leader of the Golden Lords and Mr. Reed, Meteor Man, is fighting, all of a sudden somebody gets hit in the head with a record.
Yeah.
Right? James Earl Jones, he prized these records. He don't touch them. These are my babies, right?
Billy Holiday.
He threw it, hit him in the head, so he could stop someone from getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You also then see these two young boys step up.
Oh, man.
Who Mr. Reed had taught. And they just like stand like, you know, "We were going to join you, but we see something better in this."
At the beginning of the movie, and I skipped this intentionally, but at the beginning of the movie, Mr. Reed is running away from the gang members.
Yeah.
And he goes and he hides in a garbage can.
Yeah.
And they show a time lapse. He hides from about 10:50 until about 2:15.
Yeah.
Okay, 10:50 at night to 2:15 a.m. Okay. And they're looking for him. This is the kid's initiation into the gang to catch him and kill him. And one of the kids who's no more than a third grader looks into the garbage can, sees him in the garbage can, and the leader goes, "Hey, you see anything over there?" And the kid looks at Mr. Reed and goes, "Nah, nobody." And he closes the garbage can and he walks away. And that said two things to me. One, that that kid had some amazing control and some amazing maturity to spare that guy's life, the teacher's life. But at the same time, Mr. Reed's cowardice made him a nobody to that child. And that's why I say one of the biggest pieces of power that meteor instilled on Mr. Reed, Robert Townsend's character, was his confidence.
And that's why you see those boys step up at the end, because they did see something in him at that point that he is not a coward.
Fighting without his powers.
Right?
Fighting without his powers.
Yeah. So,
exactly.
To continue on that theme, and I think we're going to get to a point of wrapping up here.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue on that theme, you see the movie end where it's not just the community members and the immediate community you've seen most of the movie step up to say, "We're going to fight back, knowing we're losing. We're going to go through a losing battle." But you see every other gang show up. You see the Crips, the Bloods, the Vice Lords. You see everybody show up and say, "This is our community.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come together because what you're doing is ruining our community."
Mm-hmm.
And you almost see the original reason why some of those gangs formed.
Oh, yeah.
They don't say it. But I'd say if you know the history of gangs, the Bloods and Crips were, in my understanding, started from religious concepts.
Well, they were family-based for sure.
Right.
They provided a family support system to people who didn't, for one reason or another, have that support.
Right. So you see them coming back to those almost original roots of that and supporting the community and saying, like, "We're going to force you out." And I think that's so powerful. Yeah. There are some other things we could point out in terms of like who is controlling the Golden Lords and stuff.
Yeah.
But we don't have to get into that. But I think, you know, some of the biggest messages is that you can make change with any kind of power.
Absolutely.
And I think it's easy to say Media Man did that, but I think that power ended up being confidence.
Yep.
If you really boil it down to it. And I'm glad that you really highlighted that and pointed that out. Because I think that confidence of one would inspire others to really make a community as a whole feel powerful and feel super powered to make some real change. And I think the other message is really just to get involved in your community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to take away from this whole episode and you want to take away from what Media Man is really trying to tell you, get in your community that you live in so that you can change the community you care about. Even if it feels like you can't win,
mm-hmm.
you doing something about it
yep.
is going to have an impact.
Yep.
We're starting to see that more and more. And today, I think it's the positive side to social media is that it's helping people get together
mm-hmm.
and speak with one voice yep. versus several voices mm-hmm. not connecting. Yeah. I don't know if you have any like parting words.
Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as just the excuse of just being one person. That's not a thing, right? When you are in a community and you're living this experience and everybody else is living that same experience, you might feel like you're the only mm-hmm. person. You're not. And when you marshal your resources, your time, your effort, your energy, you pull that all together and you adopt a mentality that won't accept failure, that won't accept anything less than the standards that you set, there's no limit to what you can do. And that's what Media Man instilled in me. And that's what I plan on instilling in my kids and so on and so forth. So it didn't do well in the box office.
No, but, it didn't.
It's certainly still alive and well. And this message is timeless.
And I think it's something obviously going to stay with us. I kind of want to go back to it. I said I was going to come back to it.
Yeah.
And I want to. And it's really my love for Robert Townshend. And the impact he had on me really as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the things I always said I wanted to be when I grew up, one was a veterinarian, another was a superhero. But I think as I grew older, I ultimately wanted to become a good father.
Yeah.
And as we sit here both as fathers, you almost see, and this is like, so I listen to this podcast called Fan Theory World,
uh-huh.
and it really just kind of dives into all the theories that are out there. I listen to it every week that it comes out. They actually did a really good one recently at Cartoon Network, so you can check them out. But I have a theory that Robert Townshend almost has a progress to his life in this. So you have him as a musician in the Five Heartbeats, mm-hmm. right? And I want to say he plays the bass in that. But when he plays the bass in that, that's not 91. He's still playing the bass in Media Man. So it's almost like there's a seamless transition into him being in the community of Media Man. Mm-hmm. He loses his power at the end of Media Man. And then 2 years later, you have the television series called The Parenthood, where he has a family, he is an educator, he is still doing some of the same things that were streamlined throughout that whole movie. So my theory is that Robert Townshend in the TV show, The Parenthood, was still Mr. Reed in The Media Man, and in his previous life, maybe prior to college, and his wife at the time was part of the Five Heartbeats.
Man, that's over my head. Come on.
Right? Doesn't that kind of blow my mind? But like, so as I say that, like, as I put that together, and maybe I did subconsciously when I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
but like, Robert Townshend in that show, The Parenthood, he was always like one of the fathers, like those father figures growing up without a father that I kind of admired to be like.
Mm-hmm.
He was quirky, he was mm-hmm. funny, but he was also extremely smart.
Oh, yeah.
He was all very much about helping the community even in that show. And I think that was, yeah. He's doing some really good things. I'd love to see him come back and really have some positive impact in some of the things that are getting put on TV and movies today. So
no one knows we need it. I'll tell you that one.
Yeah, so ode to you, Robert Townshend.
All right, love you, man. If you're listening, if you're out there listening, Robert Townshend.
So we love it. But I want to thank you for coming back, Teron, for another episode of Superpower Society. For those who are listening, if you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at @SuperpoweredSOC. And just be part of the conversation. Keep highlighting where you see superheroes in today's society, and where you see society and superheroes, where those superheroes are making some change. So with that said, this is Superpowered Society. Make sure you release your powers into our society.